content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page with a special report headline. Dawn's Early Light, fueled by a resurgence in manufacturing and the CSX Corporation project, these eastern North Carolina counties are bracing for unprecedented growth. And that's the headline on the front page. The stories concerning the counties begin inside the Triangle Business Journal. With the first headline is a focus on Edgecombe. CSX decision drives firms to consider county for ops. Manufacturing. Something is growing in Edgecombe County, and it's not just sweet potatoes. Industry recruiters say the county could be on the verge of a major manufacturing expansion, sparked in part by a 1-2 punch of economic fortune. A proposed $272 million CSX regional container hub to be located in Rocky Mount, and an $8.6 million Golden Leaf Foundation grant for infrastructure development at the Kingsborough Megasite, the county's nearly 1,500-acre industrial site waiting for business. We're a typical eastern North Carolina county, very heavy in agriculture. We grow more sweet potatoes than anywhere else in the world, says Norris Tolson, president and CEO of the Carolinas Gateway Partnership, the public-private partnership that recruits industry for Edgecombe and Nash counties. We are an agricultural area, but having said that, we have a very strong manufacturing cluster. In fact, he says, Edgecombe County industry recruiters are scrambling to close several potential deals for the megasite. We've got 9 projects in review now, Tolson says. Our volume is up 80%, and I don't mean just kicking the tires and people making phone calls. We're doing deep dives. We're not ready to make an announcement yet, but we expect to this year. We've got to close the deals, but these are significant size projects, and 80 to 90% of it is being driven by the CSX hub. It's not like Edgecombe doesn't already have manufacturing activity. Even though unemployment tops 8%, Pfizer is in the midst of a $150 million plant expansion. Honeywell, Eaton, and Cummins churn daily. Japanese automotive parts manufacturer Kaying, Carolina System Technology in Tarboro, has launched a $13 million plant expansion that will add more than 40 new jobs over the coming 3 years. But more seems to be coming. We've got a tremendous amount of land, Tolson says. We've got 5,000 acres under option, and we've got plenty of workers. We have a potential workforce of 150,000 workers from our MSA, Metropolitan Statistical Area. I don't have any problem looking a client in the eye and saying, if you need 300 or 400 people, you can find them. And that article was written by Dan Hedrick, who also writes the next article concerning education. In the year since Edgecombe Community College opened its new three-story, 45,000-square-foot, $12.2 million biotechnology and medical simulation center at the school's Rocky Mount campus, one of only 2 such facilities in the state, something unexpected has happened. What we're finding is the caliber of students for the limited number of spots is greater than we expected, says ECC President Deborah Lamb. We're getting the cream of the crop. They're coming in from Wake County and Durham and the Triangle. They're carpooling to drive to Rocky Mount so that they can train in this facility. The center is designed to look like and function as a real hospital setting, so the current limit of 80 students can train in a collaborative, interdisciplinary environment. The simulated settings, featuring high-tech mannequin patients, include an emergency room, intensive care, nurse's station, radiography and surgical suites, and an ambulance setting. Simulation training covers nursing, practical nursing, nurse aid, medical assisting, surgical technology, radiography, and respiratory therapy. They can learn, and they can even make mistakes and not affect a live patient, Lamb says. Moreover, in addition to attracting new students, the Biotechnology and Medical Simulation Center has helped the school recruit new faculty as well, she adds. Real estate. Edgecombe County's 507 square miles are mostly given over to farms, natural beauty along the Tar River, pockets of industry, small towns, and high hopes. It also has history, and historic homes represent a significant draw for real estate activity. In Tarboro, the county seat, several homes and buildings have been preserved and listed with the National Register of Historic Places. The barracks and Batts houses, Calvary Episcopal Church, the Cotton Press, the Grove, and the Railroad Depot Complex rise from the past. The historic Tarboro Town Commons is one of only two in the country, along with Boston. Donna Dew, a real estate agent at Century 21, the Combs Company, recently sold an old home overlooking the town commons. "People either like older homes or they don't, but we've recently sold everything," she says. "There's really been a good interest in older homes, and they're all sold. We have so few houses on the market now." And it's not just historic Tarboro. Older and historic homes anchor the growth of newer neighborhoods in Brattleboro, Whitakers, Princeville, and Macclesfield, Leggett, Mercer, Pine Tops, and Canito. "We do have a lot of old homes around the county with significant historical value," Dew says. "It's usually younger people who want them, young professionals with good jobs who can afford the electric bills." Transportation. Transportation lies at the heart of one of rural Edgecombe County's critical key economic clusters, logistics. To the west is I-95, and to the south are I-587 and US 64. There are state ports to the east and a north-south CSX rail line slicing the center of Rocky Mount. QVC, employing some 1,800 workers during peak cycles of picking, packing, warehouse fulfillment operations, depends on proximity to highways and rail lines, port connections, and regional airport terminals to move product. National grocery distributor McLean Carolina, where 450 people work, has been operating from its Brattleboro warehouse for two decades. Kanban Logistics ships products throughout the eastern U.S. for aerospace, automotive, advanced manufacturing, and food processing industries. And now comes the proposed $272 million regional intermodal CSX rail container hub in Rocky Mount, the Carolina Connector, that will send, receive, route, and redirect freight from trucks, trains, ship holds, and air cargo bays to markets and customers across the country. The project will create about 150 permanent jobs, officials say, but what it really promises is a jolt for companies that manage the movement of products. And finally, in healthcare, like most rural populations in the state, a fairly high percentage of Edgecombe's 55,000 souls suffer maladies of the poor: heart disease, obesity, diabetes, and cerebrovascular disease, leading to stroke and sexually transmitted diseases. Unlike many rural areas, Edgecombe has a healthcare network that has taken big steps to reach those with the greatest needs, particularly in the area of sexually transmitted diseases. Health assessment surveys in recent years ranked Edgecombe number one in the state for HIV, number two for chlamydia and gonorrhea, and number three for AIDS. Those alarming statistics and high teen pregnancy rates prompted county and public health leaders to develop programs to spread education, raise awareness, and increase testing. One such program, REACH, talks to middle and high school students about teen pregnancy prevention and STDs. It's such a touchy issue, and rightfully so. The feedback we get from the students is that they are glad someone is talking to them about it, says Michelle Etheridge, local public health administrator for the county. This past school year, 642 students received health education through the program. Since last July, 122 inmates at the Edgecombe Detention Center have been tested and treated as needed, and 259 at the Vidant Hospital ER. And all sections of that article were written by Dan Hedrick. And we'll come back to read about more counties at the end, but for now, we'll go over to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, "Say Goodbye to Boring Crosswalk." Want to liven up a crosswalk? The Midtown Raleigh Alliance is looking for volunteers to wield paintbrushes July 9 for a crosswalk project at North Hills. The volunteers will meet on Lassiter Mill Road at 6 a.m. between Quail Ridge Books and Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Artist Lori Arntzen designed the plan. "We've just noticed the lack of art in the area," says Emily Holton Jenkins, the Director of Administration and Events at the Midtown Raleigh Alliance. "Downtown has a ton of art. We wanted more of that." The crosswalk will be the second in the area. Earlier, Dink Densmore designed one that was painted at St. Albans Road on May 7. "That crosswalk was barely there anymore," Jenkins says. "We had to repaint the whole crosswalk, so it's very noticeable." Haddam buys Landmark on Raleigh's Wade Avenue for $98 million. One of the first rules in business is don't fall in love with a deal. That's especially true in real estate, but if Raleigh real estate investor Billy Redmond ever came close to breaking that rule, it would have been with the historic four-story Occidental building on Wade Avenue that has been home to her trademark properties for 10 years. But when her investment partners told her they wanted out, Redmond knew it was time to sell. "It's one of those bittersweet deals, but I'm also just glad to have the deal done," she says. The buyer, an affiliate of developer Greg Haddam's Empire Properties Company, paid $9.85 million for the building, according to county records. "This is such a Raleigh landmark," Haddam says. "It fits in perfectly with what we do." Trademark Properties will retain the property management duties and will remain a tenant in the building. Redmond and a group of Raleigh investors, including Neil Coker, had pooled their money in the mid-2000s to complete what turned out to be a more than $4 million renovation of the building. The property, completed in 1956, ranks as one of Raleigh's first modern office buildings and is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Yet another reason to head to the Outer Banks. Biz is always on the lookout for a good vacation spot, and sometimes old favorites are the ticket, especially when you add a new water park. Such is the case at North Carolina's Outer Banks, 3 miles from the Wright Memorial Bridge. It's called H2OBX Water Park, and it officially opened June 22. The $46 million park is situated on 20-plus acres along U.S. 158 in Currituck County's Powell's Point and is likely to employ about 300 seasonal workers. The park was built over a span of about 8 months and has a nautical theme that draws inspiration from familiar North Carolina icons, including historic lighthouses, famous pirate ships, and the Wright brothers. It boasts more than 20 attractions, such as a wave pool, adventure lagoon, private cabanas, and water slides. Now, where is that swimsuit? Durham exec launches social app platform. For Robert Hartsfield, the Durham software executive, starting a media engagement platform called SpokeHub may have been unnerving at first, but the vision, scope, and opportunities offered clarity as he built his management team. Hartsfield is creating a social bazaar for users who can create public and private rooms around trending topics and areas of interest on a free app. "We essentially want to make the user experience relevant and not waste a user's time on the social platform reviewing things they have no interest in," says Hartsfield, adding the company has already had pledges in excess of $150,000 from angel investors. SpokeHub enlists 12 people, including Chief Technology Officer John McAdory, who spent 15 years in pharmaceuticals and biotech, Chief Operating Officer John York, formerly of SAS, and Vice President of Business Development Richard Berryman III, who worked at Channel Advisor, Avalara, and Blackboard. The app is free to download, and that's SpokeHub, spelled S-P-O-K-E-H-U-B. Biotech Center goes to extreme to entertain. Next up, at the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, stand-up comedy. NC Biotech welcomed comedian Tim Extreme Lee June 28 as part of its annual summer social. Jim Shamp, director of public relations, says the center wanted to lighten up and keep finding ways to make science fun, and yes, even funny. Lee is smart, too. He received a Ph.D. in biology from the University of California, Davis, as well as the equivalent in comedy from the School of Hard Knocks, Shamp says. As for Lee's middle name, it really is Extreme, spelled X-T-R-E-M-E, according to Shamp, chosen by his father in hopes he would become a stuntman. Mr. President, are you in with drone technology, sir? Michael Chasen, CEO of Raleigh drone developer Precision Hawk, took a message to the White House in June asking President Donald Trump directly to address restrictions limiting innovation of the flying devices. At a White House technology summit, officials attended by both Trump and Vice President Mike Pence, drone makers, wireless companies, and venture capitalists discussed how to promote and develop emerging technologies. "We need to make sure that we are competitive internationally and truly putting America first," Chasen told the crowd at a drone breakout session, according to a summary released by Precision Hawk. By putting momentum behind some of these key sectors with forward-leaning legislation, we will unlock the massive potential of these technologies that are already increasing efficiencies and revenue across the key sectors of our American economy, including agriculture, energy, insurance, and infrastructure. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Amanda Hoyle. The headline, Advance Auto Parts Cuts Hundreds of Management Positions to Reduce Costs. As part of CEO Tom Greco's strategic plan to turn sales and profits around for retail giant Advance Auto Parts, he told analysts in November that the company would be looking to remove unnecessary costs, equating to about $500 million in cost reductions over the next 5 years. Part of that plan was recently put in action as the company confirmed on June 27 that it had notified about 475 of its middle management employees that their jobs were either being demoted or eliminated. Greco became CEO in April 2016. We communicated to our team last week some structural changes within our field, supply chain, and corporate support functions, which in some cases resulted in position eliminations. Company spokeswoman Lori Stacy said, no store-level associate or management positions were affected, she says. The impacted jobs equate to less than 1% of Advance Auto Parts' payroll of close to 74,000 full-time and part-time employees across the U.S., Canada, and surrounding territories. But many of the people who were demoted or in jobs that were eliminated had been with the company for 20 years or more. Stacy would not detail where the affected employees were based, but based on anonymous employee posts to the website thelayoff.com, employee positions at the company's corporate campuses in Raleigh and Roanoke, Virginia, plus distribution centers in Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Maine, Delaware, and Colorado have been affected. These organizational changes ensure our structure and resources are properly aligned with our short and long-term strategic business plan, she said. We are focused on productivity enhancements in areas that do not affect our customers while also significantly improving the customer experience. Luxury home sales on the rise at NC Coast. A review of high-end home sales data from all along North Carolina's coastline shows that interest in luxury homes is picking up. In New Hanover County, which includes all of Wilmington, Wrightsville Beach, and Figure Eight Island, the sale of homes priced at $750,000 and above has increased 27% from the year prior, with luxury home sales in nearby Brunswick County up nearly 22%. Neil Johnson, president of Cape Fear Realtors, formerly the Wilmington Regional Association of Realtors, says January home sales posted their highest number of sales for that month since the agency started keeping records of coastal home sales, up 40.75% compared to January 2016. In May, average unit sale prices in New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties hit a nine-year high of $274,150, a 5.6% increase over last year. Year-to-date unit sales were up 19.7% in May, with the average days on market dropping to 89 days. Along North Carolina's Outer Banks, luxury homes listings are also sealing the deal. Year-to-date in May, the Outer Banks Association of Realtors saw a 21% increase from the year prior. People in the market for luxury homes were probably apprehensive for many years, and I think we've gotten past that, Johnson says. I think it goes back to people being more confident where our country is and our economic situation. Powell to lead Raleigh firm. Raleigh commercial real estate veteran John Powell has been tapped to be the new president and principal of the Phoenix Commercial Properties Real Estate Brokerage Firm, following the death, April 7, of the company's founder, John LaRocca. LaRocca started the company in 2011 after working for more than 14 years with what was then the Grubb and Ellis Thomas Linderman Graham real estate firm that was also co-managed by his father-in-law, Rex Thomas. Thomas retired in 2015, but stepped in upon LaRocca's sudden death, leaving behind his wife, Susan, and their four children. John Powell was the only guy I went after and the only guy I talked to, Thomas says. Our vision is to continue John LaRocca's vision, and John Powell wants to do that. For more than 20 years, Powell led his own commercial real estate firm, Powell Properties, based in Cary. In 2013, he sold the company and joined Trademark Properties in Raleigh. Apartment building rising in downtown Durham. Charlotte apartment development firm Terwilliger Pappas has started construction of the 194-unit Solis Brightleaf apartment building at 1005 West Main Street in Durham. The project is next to the landmark Brightleaf Square dining and retail destination, formerly the site of the now-shuttered Howerton Bryan Funeral Home. Solis Brightleaf is the company's second major development project in Durham, following the completion of Solis 9th Street about a mile away in 2016. Terwilliger Pappas sold its equity ownership in Solis 9th Street to a fund managed by Raleigh-based Blue Heron Asset Management. Wilmington's Independence Mall sells for $45 million. The beleaguered Independence Mall property in Wilmington has closed the final chapter on a foreclosure proceeding that had been dragging since 2014 with a $45 million court-approved sale of the mall to a new owner. Rouse Properties, a New York-based mall management group, is claiming Independence Mall among its portfolio of properties on its company's website, but a final deed transfer had not been recorded in New Hanover County as of June 26. According to Commercial Real Estate Direct, Rouse Properties' parent company, Brookfield Asset Management, finalized the deal about a week ago. Now we turn to the On Tech and Transportation page written by Lauren Onasorge. The main headline, Frontier Sees Opportunity at RDU. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport continues its push for more nonstop destinations, one of the nation's fastest-growing budget carriers is among those analyzing it for opportunities. Daniel Schurz, Chief Commercial Officer of Denver-based Frontier Airlines, says that as the company has reduced its cost base under the private equity ownership of Indigo Partners, it's allowed us to expand what we call our low fares done right. That's already translated to RDU offerings, such as airlines' new nonstop flight to Vegas, Las Vegas, and more could be coming. RDU service is routinely monitored, Schurz says. As support for its local offering increases, he says, we continue to watch for more opportunities. And those include routes they deem both non-served and underserved, he adds. Additionally, his team eyes competitive changes in the market to determine opportunities for the airline. Given that in this decade you're one of the fastest growing metro areas in the country, it also makes sense for us here at Frontier to keep looking at what opportunities does that create, Schurz says. The airline also has been expanding its nonstop service options in Las Vegas, where one of its chief competitors, Allegiant Air, is based. Its most recent addition to the RDU lineup fits in with its strategy in both markets. Schurz says the company doesn't comment on where its air service arm might focus the next nonstop flight. We continue to see good support from the community in terms of demand for flights, so we will continue to look for demand in terms of adding additional destinations, he says. We have a very good working relationship with the airport, and over time, there's no reason to think we wouldn't continue to find new opportunities. Frontier offers nonstop flights to Orlando International, Philadelphia, and Trenton, New Jersey. In August, it adds a nonstop service to Las Vegas, directly competing with Southwest Airlines, which is currently RDU's sole carrier to that city. Frontier has in plane more than 40,600 passengers so far this year at RDU, a 41% increase over last year. As of the end of May, Frontier had a 1.8% share of RDU's boarding passengers. Should a carrier such as Frontier bring in a flight to one of RDU's most in-demand unserved markets, it could be in line for incentives, such as those extended to Allegiant when it recently announced nonstop service to Puerto Rico. North Carolina's Four Oaks Bank, acquired by Georgia Company. A rural North Carolina bank is losing its name, but not its branches. That's according to David Rupp, CEO of Four Oaks FinCorp, parent of Four Oaks-based Four Oaks Bank. which is being acquired by the Georgia parent of United Community Banks in a deal valued at $124 million. The buyout takes away Four Oaks' name and headquarters, but not its local presence, he says. Because this is a new market for them and because they do want to grow the bank through Central North Carolina, including Raleigh, they want to keep all of our franchises intact, including our people, our bankers, he explains. Rupp's future at the company, however, is uncertain. Those conversations are to be held, he says, declining to comment further. The deal announced June 27 resulted from a four-month effort by Four Oaks' board to evaluate options, he says. The question the board needed to answer is, how do we gain the size and the scale to compete, he adds. The board decided a partner for the bank, which has 12 full-service locations, was the best strategy. Rupp says cultural alignment was quickly evident when the firm's investment banker connected it to United. Centerline to fill space by sharing with HQ Raleigh. Raleigh marketing agency Centerline Digital is opening the doors of its entire 31,000-square-foot North Street building to co-working firm HQ Raleigh, transforming the space into what's being dubbed a shared economy space. In April, Centerline CEO Charles Long confirmed the agency's largest client had cut Centerline spending by 20%, a move that led to two dozen layoffs. Centerline has 100 Raleigh employees. On June 26, the company announced the deal with HQ Raleigh. They have been longtime partners as Centerline owns the entrepreneurial initiative's flagship space on Harrington Street. Martin Marietta making major buy. Martin Marietta Materials CEO says the aggregates maker's pending $1.6 billion buy of Bluegrass Materials means big business in the Southeast. Ward Nye says the buy, announced June 26, came out of a long auction process and means major opportunities ahead. These are very attractive markets for us that we think are in early stages of recovery, he says of the assets coming with Bluegrass. In the Southeast, he says, states are growing at rates greater than the national average. About 45% of our product typically will find its way into some sort of infrastructure, and that need follows people. It's the biggest acquisition for the firm since the 2014 buy of Texas Industries, an all-stock deal valued at about $3 billion that gave the company greater exposure to cement markets in Texas and California. And finally, in a section called He Said It, the quote, I'm not sure the Council for Entrepreneurial Development always does a fantastic job of taking credit for what it does. The specialty of CED has never been promoting itself, so I think there's an opportunity, as we serve the entrepreneurial community, to make the community more aware of the role CED plays. And that is from Stephen Frazier, new chairman of CED's board and co-founder of Spoonflower. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Life Sciences page written by Jennifer Henderson. The first headline, Raleigh firm targets Canadian market. Raleigh's BioDelivery Sciences International expects to launch a key product in Canada early next year and has plans for other international markets as well. BDSI reacquired Belbuca, a pain management product, from Endo Pharmaceuticals earlier this year. There's been quite a bit of interest in Belbuca, Al Medwar, Senior Vice President of Corporate and Business Development at BDSI, said in an email. We have been talking to a number of potential partners for other regions such as EU, Latin America, Southeast Asia, and Australia. Including Canada, we hope to secure up to two partnerships this year. BDSI announced June 23 that Belbuca has received Health Canada approval and that it expects to launch the product in Canada early next year with a commercial partner. BDSI has not yet announced a partner for Canada, though we have been in discussions with potential partners. The approval was an important step in moving toward finalizing a partnership, which we plan to complete in the third quarter of this year, Medwar said. All of this would support a launch in early 2018. Medwar said the company was not ready to provide any specific guidance on sales in Canada. As of last month, BDSI said Belbuca prescription sales had reached their highest point since Endo launched the product at the beginning of last year. BDSI reported net revenue of $29.5 million for the first quarter of this year, compared to net revenue of $3 million for the first quarter of 2016. That $29.5 million included Belbuca sales of $4.6 million and $20 million in contract revenues related to the release of deferred revenue for Belbuca, according to BDSI. Had the reacquisition not happened, rather than sales from Belbuca, BDSI would have seen $640,000 in royalties. Coastal Carolina Diner sues state agency over workers' comp fines. A seasonal diner in Corolla has filed a lawsuit against the North Carolina Industrial Commission, several of its leaders, and the state of North Carolina over close to $87,000 in workers' compensation fines. According to the complaint filed by Paulson Beach Ventures, LLC, doing business as First Light Breakfast and Burgers, in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina, First Light says the excessive fine levied by the Industrial Commission is in violation of its 8th and 14th Amendment rights. Joseph Huchin of Raleigh's Dysart Willis, representing First Light, says he believes the case is likely representative of situations being faced by hundreds of small businesses across the state. In 2014, the Industrial Commission implemented its non-compliant employer targeting system, which it calls a software tool that analyzes data sources from various state agencies and identifies potentially non-compliant employers who may be in violation of the North Carolina Workers' Compensation Act. First Light states that it did not receive notice of its non-compliance from the Industrial Commission until a letter postmarked January 9, and that it secured a workers' compensation insurance policy effective January 13, with a total estimated annual premium of $1,747. It states that there have been no workplace injuries during its operation. The diner states that even with the immediate compliance from date of notification, it received a penalty assessment order from the Industrial Commission on March 7 in the amount of $86,750, or $50 per day of noncompliance from January 1, 2012 to September 30, 2016. The Industrial Commission has demonstrated a policy of strict penalization in a way that threatens small businesses across North Carolina, First Light states in its complaint. J. Brian Ratledge, general counsel at the Industrial Commission, declined to comment. Quintiles IMS may offload contract sales business. Quintiles IMS, with dual headquarters in Durham and Danbury, Connecticut, following last year's mega merger, is looking to offload its contract sales business, according to a report from Reuters, which further noted a deal could value the business at up to $1 billion. Citing people familiar with the matter, the report said that the potential sale falls in line with the company looking to divest some non-core businesses post-merger, and that a number of private equity firms are interested in the pickup. A spokeswoman for Quintiles IMS said in an email that, as corporate policy, we do not comment on rumor or speculation. Homegrown Quintiles announced its $9 billion merger with Danbury-based IMS Health in May of last year, and the deal closed in October. The deal has been one in a series of consolidations among contract research organizations and related entities in recent months, with major players looking to differentiate and bulk up market shares. NC Bar Association has big plans for pro bono. Karen Coppage McNeil, a partner at Smith Anderson, Blunt, Dorset, Mitchell & Jernigan, and leader of the firm's employee benefits and executive compensation practice, began her one-year appointment as the North Carolina Bar Association's 123rd president, June 24. A primary focus for McNeil will be a number of big pro bono projects across the state, and she says those projects are comfortably in our wheelhouse. The North Carolina Bar Association is a community, and it is the place where North Carolina's lawyers come together to make a difference for our profession and the public, McNeil said in an email. In the coming year, we will seek to make the NCBA still stronger, We will hone our value proposition and enhance the experience of our members, and we will redouble our efforts to be a power for good in our state. McNeil will launch the American Bar Association's free legal answers web-based program across North Carolina in the coming year. The program serves lower-income community members through the ability to submit civic legal questions through a web portal that are answered by attorney volunteers. Also on the agenda is continuing the North Carolina Bar Association's annual 4ALL, or For All, Statewide Service Day. McNeil co-chaired the campaign, the first campaign, during 2007 to 2008. According to Smith Anderson, this year's event saw 560 attorneys at call centers across the state answer 9,900 calls free of charge. And finally, G1 Therapeutics cancer products watched closely. After raising more than $108 million in its initial public offering last month, Research Triangle Park-based G1 Therapeutics is expecting important milestones for its cancer therapy candidates in 2018. Eric Schmidt, a managing director and senior research analyst at Cowan & Company, says that the real money to be made or lost will be in 2018, with the potential for much more proof-of-concept data around triazolam and G1-T38. Both are very high-interest programs for us, he adds. G1's IPO included close to $7.8 million shares of common stock priced at $15 per share, and its stock is currently trading north of $18. We project product launches for triazolam and G1-T38 in 2021, and that the products combined will yield revenues of $1 billion plus in 2025, states a recent research report from Cowan & Company. And now we turn to the On Government page, written by Danielle Kemptob. The main headline, UNC system gets slight cut in budget. Though higher education was spared major cuts in this year's budget, the University of North Carolina system requested more than what was allocated for some of its big-ticket agenda items. The budget fully funds anticipated enrollment growth of around 2% at the state's public universities, but the UNC administration requested more than $10 million in fiscal year 2017 to 2018 and $18 million for fiscal year 2018 to 2019 for an enhanced data system to track graduate success and faculty retention. It received $1 million and $9 million, respectively. In any budget, there are priorities put forward that don't get funded, says Jonathan Pruitt, Senior Vice President of Finance and Budget for the UNC system. He says overall, the budget makes significant additional investments in state universities. The system also requested a $3 million recurring increase for its faculty retention fund, which Pruitt says was nearly depleted, but the state appropriated $1 million in non-recurring funds. We are constantly being raided by universities in other states, says Representative Craig Horn, a Republican from Union County. We need to be able to respond to those challenges in order to keep high-quality instructors in our universities. Professors will receive a $1,000 one-time raise in line with salary increases for state employees overall. Average faculty salaries at all but five of the UNC system's campuses fall below the 50th percentile of those peer institutions, according to a report to the Board of Governors last year. The budget mandates a system-wide flexibility management cut of $7 million to the UNC system's operating budget, Pruitt says. Operating revenue for the system the last fiscal year was $6.4 billion. Governor Roy Cooper vetoed the budget on June 27, citing a lack of investment in education, but was overruled the next day. Other provisions in the budget include $2.8 million in 2017 to 2018 and $2 million in 2018 to 2019 to stabilize dwindling enrollment at Elizabeth City State University. $1 million in recurring funds to increase the number of slots at the UNC Chapel Hill School of Medicine, and $4 million in recurring funds to stabilize East Carolina University's Brody School of Medicine, and a $500,000 or 4% reduction in the budget of the UNC Chapel Hill School of Law. The Senate's initial proposal would have cut $4 million from the school. And now we turn to the A Better World page in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Todd Cohen, who is also the publisher of Philanthropy North Carolina. First, we'll read his column, the headline, New York Kid Gets Fresh Air in Triangle. On July 12, a handful of low-income children ages 7 to 16 from New York City are scheduled to arrive by bus at the Hilton in Durham. Greeting the children will be a local volunteer for the New York City-based Fresh Air Fund and families from Raleigh that each will host one of the children for a week. 2 weeks later, a second handful of New York City children will arrive at the Hilton on a bus for a one-week stay with a second group of local families. Families will learn things about themselves and about someone who comes from such a different environment, and they will also see how many similarities they have, says Brandy Shaw, a commercial real estate paralegal at Moore & Olphin in Raleigh, who serves as volunteer chair for the Fresh Air Fund in the Triangle. Formed in 1877 to provide free summer experiences for children living in low-income communities in New York City, the Fresh Air Fund has served more than 1.8 million children in need. In 2016, nearly 7,000 children visited the homes of volunteer host families on the East Coast of the U.S. and in southern Canada, or visited one of the fund's five camps in upstate New York. As part of a larger effort to connect New York City kids with host families in more parts of the U.S., the fund expanded to North Carolina in 2013, initially in the Triad and then to the Triangle in 2014. 36 have visited the state since 2013, and another 20 are expected to visit this summer, some in the Triangle and some in the Triad. Local families that apply to the Fresh Air Fund to host a child for a week typically find out about the organization online or by word of mouth, says Shaw, and based on the relationships that develop, some children may stay with the family for longer than 2 weeks or continue to return over many summers or other parts of the year. Before moving to North Carolina in 2007, Shaw served as a volunteer escort for the Fresh Air Fund in upstate New York, where her mother's mother, and her mother's mother all had volunteered for the organization. Her role is to visit applicant families, which must fill out a form designed to help the Fresh Air Fund determine whether they will provide a safe environment and engage the children they are hosting in activities, such as boating, bicycling, camping, visiting parks, and going bowling or to the movies. Based on the forms, the Fresh Air Fund selects host families and matches children with them. Shaw greets the children when they arrive by bus, plans a picnic or other activity for all the families, and is on hand when the families drop off the children for the bus ride back to New York City. The Fresh Air Fund, Shaw says, would like to see more kids coming to North Carolina and other areas and see a different place than they otherwise would not have experienced. And now in nonprofit news, Bank partners with Youth Program. Bank of America is partnering with the City of Raleigh to help more young people get work experience and training this summer. The bank is providing financial support to Partnership Raleigh, a public-private initiative that started in 1983. Bank of America is funding 12 new youth employee positions and a new adult coach mentor position, the company said in a news release. The youth employees are working at the Chavis Learning Center in Raleigh. Overall, there are 180 young people working in the Raleigh Summer Youth Employment Program, and Partnership Raleigh is an extension of that program. Race Helps Kids Programs. Want to help the Salvation Army of Wake County and have some fun along the way? Then you can sign up for the 6th Annual Most Amazing Race Raleigh, coming August 26th at locations throughout downtown Raleigh. Patterned after the popular TV show, the race is a scavenger hunt and features teams of two people. The fundraising event benefits the Salvation Army's Community Center, which provides athletic programs, after-school care, and summer camps for at-risk children. The event raised $30,000 last year. Teams must raise $300 to participate and compete for prizes, including $2,500 for first place. And now we turn to the People on the Move page, where the spotlight is on Lindsay Blankenhorn, Executive Director of Carol's Kitchen. Nonprofit veteran Lindsay Blankenhorn has been named the new Executive Director of Carol's Kitchen, a nonprofit social enterprise restaurant dedicated to ending homelessness for women in Raleigh. For the past 5 years, Blankenhorn has been charged with the oversight of Mission Increase Raleigh's operations, communications, and engagement. In her new role at Carol's Kitchen, she will oversee the day-to-day operations of the organization and help shape and maintain its strategic vision. Blankenhorn succeeds Carol's Kitchen co-founder Vicky Ismail, who is stepping back from the ED role to again put on the hat of restaurateur. "I look forward to allowing Lindsay to lead Carol's Kitchen through our next season of growth," Ismail stated. Based in downtown Raleigh, Carol's Kitchen began as a nonprofit restaurant dedicated to ending homelessness for women in Raleigh. Its expanded mission has evolved into working to create opportunities for single women experiencing homelessness by empowering them through job training, life skills, and even housing. According to its latest 990 tax filing, Carol's Kitchen had a total revenue of around $40,000 in 2015. Here's an excerpt of a Q&A she did on Carol's Kitchen's website. "What drew you to Carol's Kitchen? I've worked closely with dozens of local nonprofits on organizational health and sustainability, and Carol's Kitchen is one of the organizations that captivated me from its inception. Which of your passions manifest in leading the organization?" "Well, two passions, really. Good food. I believe that some of our most sacred moments happen around the table and with good food. I personally have always loved cooking and serving those I love. Being a part of an organization that does that for others really excites me. I also really believe in the power of restoration, helping women get a foothold on life again so that they might be equipped and excited to step into life more prepared and believing in themselves. That's the most exciting thing. I'm so looking forward to walking alongside our women." "What does empowerment mean to you?" "To me, it means giving people the tools they need to craft their own future, equipping folks with the self-esteem, love, encouragement, along with practical life skills to get them to a place where they can say, 'I can do this. I believe in myself. Let's go.'" Family: husband Richard, daughter Ada. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page, where we read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline: Pick the Data You Need to Prosper in Business. In business, you are constantly looking to get ahead, whether it be sales, strategy, or managing your high-maintenance employees. You know if you let things slip, it will hurt your business. A report came across my desk recently that got me thinking about how we can use the added intelligence to monetize our efforts. Many of you may have seen the report, but only filed away the information is interesting. But think harder. This information can help you with strategy and alter your future plans of selling your products and services. The U.S. Census Bureau recently dove into the population growth of the Triangle in North Carolina municipalities between 2015 and 2016, a trend that may offer us additional fodder about future demographics. Broadly speaking, the Triangle's population growth is across the board. In numbers, 6 of the top 10 cities and towns in the state are in the Triangle: Raleigh, Durham, Cary, Wake Forest, Fuquay-Varina, and Holly Springs. That's not a surprise. What is a surprise, however, is that when we look at largest percentage change in population growth, we find towns such as Wendell and Rollsville pop up among top 10 areas in the state. Between 2015 and 2016, Rollsville grew 11% and Wendell grew by 7.5%, primarily because they are small towns. If you're looking to buy investment property or perhaps starting a new pet grooming service without paying high lease rates in Raleigh or Cary, you may start thinking about these municipalities. But the population information is not enough to make that important financial decision. You also need to see the type of households moving into these areas, their average profile relating to age, income, and education. For that, we turn to the American Community Survey, and we notice the median age in Rollsville is about 34 years, and the average household income is almost $82,000, much different from Raleigh or Durham. Wendell, on the other hand, has a much lower median household income, $45,304, and only 69% of the residents live in a single-family unit. However, the town's share of retail sales is about the state average, suggesting that people like to spend money there. It's not Roseville or Wendell that's the story here. The story is what we can do with the data. Data show us historical trends and help us make predictive analysis. Businesses that are razor-focused on that exercise are the ones that will lap their competition in the future. I have the data that prove it. And also on the Viewpoint page, we'll read a column written by Vandana Sinha, who is the managing editor of the Washington Business Journal. The headline, Need for Washington to Leave NIH Funding Alone. The current administration paraded into office this year with blustery vows to drain the swamp. Turns out we all heard wrong, folks. It wasn't swamps they meant to drain. It was science, right when we'll be needing it the most. The administration is hell-bent on slashing scientific research of all stripes, $5.8 billion from the National Institutes of Health, $1 billion from the National Cancer Institute, $776 million from the National Science Foundation, $1.2 billion from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. For the NIH, it's a proposed 18% gash to a budget that saw its last major rise, 16%, in 2003. Since then, it's seen average 3.26% annual increases, that is, for the years there were any increases. In much of that time, from 1999 to 2013, women have seen zero change in their overall rates of new cancer cases for every 100,000 Americans. Zero, not a single percentage point difference in 14 years. Thanks to the particularly pernicious breast cancer, which remains on the rise, men, meanwhile, have been far luckier. Their drop in cancer rates, a whopping, eye-popping 2.3%. So, yep, our work is done here, right? That, by the way, doesn't include everything else, from diabetes to depression, Alzheimer's to AIDS, malaria to multiple sclerosis, and the dozens upon dozens of other diseases, physical, biological, and mental, that continue to ravage humankind around the globe. Yes, I can see why this madness must stop. Icicles are undoubtedly forming in the devil's abode as I say this, but thank goodness for some sense in Congress, whose omnibus budget last month recommended a $2 billion boost to the NIH budget instead of a $6 billion laceration. The proposed cuts are short-sighted, acquiesced Representative Tom Cole, a Republican Oklahoman whose House committee oversees NIH funding. What he's probably referring to is the next decade's snowballing need for medical science and research. What the administration sees as inefficiencies today will all too quickly turn into imperatives by 2029. When aging baby boomers are expected to make up one out of every five Americans. You know, the demographic of many of the very administration officials hawking the budget cuts? I'm guessing they would have a different song to sing if they or their loved ones were ever in actual need of the clinical trials or personalized drugs that NIH funding has helped birth. Scientific research has changed the world over and over and over. From a Columbia University experiment on fruit flies that opened the door to genome sequencing, to vaccines that eradicated diseases that literally plagued upon entire generations of people, our civilization would not be what it is today without publicly funded medical science and innovation. And there's still so very long to go. If left only to the largely risk-averse, returns-adoring private sector, bioscience would wither under the weight of its decades-long timelines and multi-billion-dollar budgets. While some may be treating this as an extra-credit science experiment graded on some curve, these are people's lives and futures hanging in the balance, from a senior's bone loss to a newborn's heart murmur. Just ask Jimmy Kimmel or any new parent like him if you think I'm being melodramatic. But let's disregard the compassion argument. Doesn't seem to carry much muscle with this executive branch, and examine the business one instead. The NIH has injected financial life into the Washington region, $2.17 billion in total funding in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. companies, nonprofits, and universities. In the triangle between the UNC Chapel Hill and Duke University, more than $828 million was dispersed by the agency for research in fiscal 2016. The numbers keep going up once you add research institutes such as RTI International, $51.2 million, and the Family Health International, $17.5 million. Without those dollars, many in the GOP's coveted small business community would be on life support in need of the very medical attention that NIH dollars would allow. Maybe that's what we've been mishearing this whole time. It's not the swamp. Maybe it's small business this administration is looking to drain. And with our final minute, we'll read as much of this story as we can. The headline, Great Outdoor Provision Makes a Move in the Triad. Great Outdoor Provision Company will move to Westover Gallery of Shops from its current Greensboro location at Friendly Center. The move is expected in February after renovations are made to combine 12,300 square feet of space that had housed Mattress Warehouse, Shane's Rib Shack, and Yo Daddy Yogurt Shop and create the Midtown store at 1410 Westover Terrace. Windsor Commercial will handle the renovations for property owner Cotis Properties and the upfit work for Great Outdoor Provision Company, which is based in Raleigh and has 9 locations, including one at 402 South Stratford Road in Winston-Salem. GOPC, currently at 3104 North Line Avenue, has been at Friendly Center since 1996. The new store will face Westover Terrace, says Rob Ahrens, the manager of GOPC in Greensboro. It will be convenient to all current customers and better serve the Battleground and Irving Park communities, he says. And we're actually going to stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangle.readingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138.